Yeah, I will start over. Okay, welcome to day one of Rohatsu Sesshin 2018. Here we are on land that was once lived on by the Dakota people. Well, still is. And yet here we are. We're also in this neighborhood that was once called Rondo neighborhood, part of Rondo neighborhood. It still would be in a way, but now we're in the Summit University, Aurora St. Anthony, thank you, Aurora St. Anthony neighborhood district. But it's still Rondo, which was an African-American community, which was really thriving until Interstate 94 came through. So I say that just to place us. So we are here. It's not that we wallow in guilt or shame about that, but that we acknowledge the reality of where we are. I will be talking this week from the flower ornament scripture, and as we'll hear, one of the important things about this scripture and a lot of the Mahayana scriptures is the place, the setting, the scene. So I wanted to open up the place and the setting and the scene for us. So this scripture, here it is. It's over 1,500 pages in kind of small print. I have a great appreciation now for the translator, Thomas Cleary. I'm just thinking about that. Like, what a labor of love to translate this. So he calls it, and I think it's true, one of the most influential Mahayana sutras. The translations of the title, so he translates the title, the Flower Ornament Scripture. Some other translations are the Flower Garland Sutra, the Flower Adornment Sutra, or the Flower Ornament Scripture. So again, the translator, Thomas Cleary, calls it one of the most grandiose, the most comprehensive, and the most beautifully arrayed of the Buddhist scriptures. It describes a cosmos of infinite realms upon realms, mutually containing one another. So as I was doing bows earlier today, I was noticing this tapestry that we have. And unless you're up close, you probably can't see exactly, but there's the Buddha, the medicine Buddha in the center, and then all around there's all these different Buddhas and Bodhisattvas kind of on clouds, on thrones, you know. Anyway, it's very fantastical with flowers and palaces and jewels, so. And, you know, if you hang around enough Buddhist places, you'll see art like this. So that kind of art is showing what the scriptures like the flower ornament scripture talk about. Now this scripture was written in stages. Scholars say that, you know, it was probably not written all at once, and it was begun to be written down about 500 years after the Buddha's death, which would have been right around the time of Christ. And it was the source of some of the very first Buddhist literature to be introduced into China. So it first came into China around the 2nd century of the Common Era. And the vision that is expressed in this sutra or scripture was the foundation for the Huayan school of Chinese Buddhism. And that school was characterized by a philosophy of interpenetration or interdependence. So that probably sounds familiar to some of us. because it was also, this sutra was also very influential in Chan Buddhism, which then became Zen when it went to Japan. So what draws me to this sutra? Two main things. One is, I think, the way that the scene that's painted and the stories that are told here really opens our hearts and minds to vast possibilities. The translator says, one of the pervasive themes of the flower ornament scripture is that there are far vaster possibilities for humankind than ordinarily suspected in the course of everyday life. So for me, that's what reading this awakens my heart and mind to. Oh, there's far vaster possibilities than what I usually see. The other thing that really draws me to this sutra is that book 39, which is the last book, also called The Entry into the Realm of Reality, holds a special place in my heart because my name, Sosan, is based on a story that's found there. And I'll talk more about that later. So here are some other themes that you'll see in the flower ornament scripture and also in book 39 that we'll be more focusing on for this session. One is that all things, all beings, mind and space itself are bodies of Buddha. So I alluded to that in the little section that I read last night. All things, all beings, mind and space itself are bodies of Buddha. Another theme is that all things are always teaching. They don't always teach in words, but they're always teaching. Another theme is the vision of life as a whole as the scene of enlightenment. So the scene of enlightenment is everywhere. And so many of these stories, you end up, okay, we're in Jetta Grove. We're under the Bodhi tree. And then there's all these other fantastical things, and yet there we are at the scene of Buddha's enlightenment. So that's implying that actually it's everywhere. So another thing that is interesting, and this is help from Thomas Cleary, the translator. Why would we study something like this? And you'll kind of see, or if you remember from last night a little bit that I read, it's like, wow, that just sounds like someone on LSD, describing this, sort of really way out there world. So why would we, in this day and age where we're grounded in science and, sort of reality, so-called what we think is reality, why would we be reading this? Why would we be reading these stories? So Cleary says, techniques of visualization, meditation, concentration, and trance are used in part to detach the mind from fixation on a given conceptual and perceptual order. So really, this book, and he says in the translator's notes that he didn't use a lot of footnotes. He has references and a glossary and things like that, but he didn't use a lot of footnotes because he said footnotes would really, well, first of all, there'd be a footnote like every other sentence or every sentence. And then footnotes actually stop the flow of the reading. And he said this is really meant to be read in a flow. You just take it in. If you don't quite understand it, it's okay. It's really kind of trance-inducing. It's a meditation in and of itself. And the reason that we do it is to kind of shake us up. So shake up our worldview. Help us to cultivate other ways of perceiving and conceiving the world. Help us to experience other spheres, which are equally true. So sometimes we like, okay, this is what I see, so this is the truth. And so we need to open our minds and hearts to the possibility that there may be other truths that we aren't aware of. And I think our imaginations help create a reality which helps us know that the reality we commonly perceive is not the whole picture. So there's a story from when we did the Sagaki ceremony here, I guess it was about a month and a half ago. So that's a ceremony where we ritually welcome the hungry ghosts or the spirits, the sort of unsatisfied spirits, you know, in ourselves as well as in the world, and ritually feed them, so offer them help. And the way we play this out is our teenage members get to play the various gakis, the hungry spirits, and then one of the teachers plays the Buddha. And then the littlest kids go and catch them. The teens are like running around outside and, you know, out in the, you know, common areas. And the little kids catch them and bring them in to come on in to meet the Buddha and then get nourishment. And I got to play the Buddha in this year. So that was fun. But I had an experience of one gaki, hungry ghost teen, who came up to me, and they have various complaints, like nobody loves me, you know, I can't get what I need, you know, they, you know, people are talking about me behind my back, you know, whatever, different things that teens could really experience. And sometimes the teens get really into it, and sometimes they're just kind of giggly. This year was a little more on the giggly side. And yet, there was still some really powerful things that happened. So one of the gakis came in with the problem of, I'll never be what I want to be. I'll never be what I want to be. So as the Buddha, I received that suffering. I said, oh, I hear that you're really suffering from that. What do you want to be? You know, I'm imagining there's going to be some story about, you know, some career or some, you know, anyway. And they said, a unicorn. Which really surprised me. It wasn't what I was expecting. But I took that in, and then I said, can you imagine yourself as a unicorn? And they said, maybe. I said, why don't you close your eyes and just imagine that? What's that like? And really experience that. And I said, and we can all do it. So, although I guess some people hadn't heard that it was the unicorn. So they were wondering why I was saying, imagine that you're a unicorn. anyway, so they did. And then I said, so did that, how was that? And that was really nice. I said, so then you did get to be it in your imagination. You got to be what you wanted to be. So it's about not limiting ourselves. So, I mean, that's kind of different than, you know, we don't want to get lost in our imagination. We want to be able to function in the world of this and that and in the conventional reality world. So that's important. But it's also important not to just get locked into that conventional reality world is the only world there is. So, in the flower ornament scripture, in the 1,500 plus pages, it presents a scheme of, among other things, it presents a scheme of 52 stages of enlightenment in 5 or 6 ranks. So I'll just say what those are for people who are kind of, you know, like interested in numbers and lists. So there's 10 abodes, 10 practices, 10 dedications, 10 stages. So you might hear, okay, wait a minute, I thought there were 52 stages, but you know, this is Buddhist numbers, so there's stages within stages. So 10 abodes, 10 practices, 10 dedications, 10 stages. And then there's universal enlightenment, which is the 11th stage, but that's presented in 10 aspects. So now we have 50. We're up to 50. And then there's also added a 6th rank, which is sublime enlightenment, and that has 2 stages or 2 aspects. For those who are, you know, who were going to be thinking, what are those? Now you know, and we can move on. So book 39, or the also called the Garland Scripture, or as I said, the book on the entry into the realm of reality, And by the way, this isn't conventional reality that we're entering. That tells those, takes those 52 stages and tells them as a story. Tells them as a story, the tale of the pilgrim Sudana visiting, get ready, 53 teachers. 52 stages, but there's 53 teachers. And these 53 teachers are wonderful, enlightening beings. They're bodhisattvas. They're beings that help other beings become enlightened or wake up. And they take the form of various ordinary beings. So some of them are priests, some of them are mendicants, beggars, scholars, doctors, entertainers, arts and crafters, all different kinds of people. And they go, they're found in villages, towns, cities, mountains, districts, all different places. And they go into these places for the purpose of leading sentient beings to enlightenment. In the story of the flower ornament scripture, the Buddha, the main Buddha in this story, is Vairochana Buddha. Vairochana Buddha is the personification of the Dharmakaya, or the truth body, or reality body Buddha, of Buddha, which embodies the very principle of enlightenment and knows no limits or boundaries. And Vairochana is also associated with illumination of wisdom. So what I'd like to do to start is read the first paragraph of the Book of the Entry into Reality. This paragraph mostly is a recitation of the names of some of the 5,000 enlightening beings who are placed at this scene before Sudana goes on his quest to meet the teachers. There's this great gathering of beings. So how can you listen to this? I would say, listen as these are beings who can inspire you, and these beings are not separate from you. So this is your potential. So when you hear the names of some of these beings, and some of them are quite wonderful, I think, then you can invite yourself to say, oh, this is my potential. So let's see. Hopefully I can find. I think I took off my page marker. Book 39, Entry into the Realm of Reality. Thus have I heard. At one time, the Blessed One was in Shravasti, in a magnificent pavilion in the garden of Anathapindata in the Jeta Grove, together with 5,000 enlightening beings, led by Samantabhadra, the universally good enlightening being, and Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom. The names were endowed with perspicacious knowledge, endowed with essential knowledge, endowed with unattached knowledge, endowed with blossoming knowledge, endowed with sun-like knowledge, endowed with moon-like knowledge, endowed with undefiled knowledge, endowed with adamantine knowledge, endowed with unemotional knowledge, endowed with radiant knowledge, star-like, mountain-like, jewel-like, unattached, flower-like, undefiled, sun-like, resplendent, dispassionate, radiant jewel energy, great energy, knowledge thunderbolt energy, undefiled energy, energy of the Sun of Truth, virtue mountain energy, energy of the light of knowledge, universal glorious energy, universal light energy, earth matrix, sky matrix, lotus calyx, jewel matrix, sun matrix, matrix of virtues, matrix of the ocean of truths, matrix of radiance, matrix of origination, matrix of lotus splendor, good eye, pure eye, undefiled eye, unobstructed eye, all-seeing eye, perceptive eye, observant eye, lotus eye, adamantine eye, jewel eye, space eye, universal eye, celestial crown, crown of jewels which gives birth to all Buddhas, crown beyond all worlds, all-illumining crown, invincible crown, crown of jewels illuminating all things in the cosmos, crown of the essential enlightenment, radiant crown, crown of jewels inset with the lion thrones of all Buddhas. How'd you like a name like that? Crown illuminating the space of the whole cosmos. Crest of Lord Brahma. Crest of the Lord of Dragons. Crest of lights emanated by all Buddhas. Crest of the essence of enlightenment. Crest of most excellent jewels of the sound of the ocean of all vows. Crest of a spew of jewels emanating the halos of all Buddhas. Crest adorned with jewels showering the non-differentiation of all surfaces of space. Crest covered with a net of the finest jewels representing the lights magically produced by all Buddhas. Crest of sounds of the wheel of teaching of all Buddhas. Crest uttering the names of everything in past, present, and future. Great light, undefiled light, light of undefiled energy, jewel light, dispassionate light, star light, light of truth, light of peace, sunlight, magical light, celestial light, torch of virtue, torch of knowledge, torch of truth, torch of super knowledge, torch of light, flower torch, torch of enlightenment, torch of universal enlightenment, jewel torch, ocean sound, earth roaring sound, voice of a world leader, sound of mountains colliding, voice pervading all universes, sound emitted by the ocean of all universes, sound of crushing all armies of demons, sound emitted by all didactic devices of great compassion, sound of stopping the sufferings of all worlds and giving comfort. Born of truth, born of excellence, born of knowledge, born of a polar mountain of virtue, born of radiance of virtues, born of splendor, born of universal illumination, born of great kindness, born of a store of knowledge, born of the family of Buddhas, glowing splendor, preeminent splendor, exalted splendor, radiant splendor, splendor of truth, splendor of the moon, splendor of the sky, jewel splendor, splendor of brilliance, splendor of knowledge, mountain lord, lord of truth, lord of the world, lord of peace, immutable lord, supremely tranquil voice, unobstructed voice, voice of earth, voice of the ocean, voice of thunder, voice of the light of truth, voice of space, voice of the roots of goodness of all beings, voice of encouragement of all past vows, jewel awareness, knowing awareness, space-like awareness, unattached awareness, undefiled awareness, purified awareness, awareness of all times, powerful awareness, all-observing awareness, awareness of the ways to the reality realm. That's the first paragraph. And I skipped some names, to be honest. There was a lot about Brahma that I kind of skipped over, because that's not so much in our understanding. Oh, watch out. So that's like the first, you know, sort of wave. Okay, so then there's all of these enlightening beings, 5,000 enlightening beings. So then, if that's not enough, then other enlightening beings come from the 10 directions. So the 10 directions are the 8 cardinal directions of the compass, so north, south, east, west, northwest, southeast, etc. And then also up and down. So all 10 directions. So I'm just going to read you one from the up direction, from the zenith. So you can get a taste of, like this, like I said, it's setting the scene. And like this picture here, this tapestry, is like just a small version of what is being described here. From the zenith, beyond as many oceans of worlds as atoms in untold Buddha lands. From the land of the Buddha, voice revealing the sphere of universal knowledge. That's the name of the Buddha in that land. Voice revealing the sphere of universal knowledge. In the world, so here's the name of the world, description of the inexhaustible lineage of the Buddhas. A great enlightening being named revealing the base of cosmic aspiration, together with a company of as many enlightening beings as atoms in untold oceans of worlds. Okay, two or three, 1,000, million, billion, trillion. A great enlightening, together, given leave by that Buddha and having disappeared from that assembly, came to this world. The name of this world is endurance. Came to this world, endurance, from every physical feature, every pore, every part of the body, every limb and joint, every utterance, every article of clothing and adornment, showing images of oceans of past efforts of all Buddhas of past, present, and future. So, in other words, in the pores and the limbs and everything is showing images of oceans of past efforts of all Buddhas of past, present, and future. Connected with transcendent giving, which took place in all lands of the 10 directions, as well as images of the receivers and the gifts reflected in every mark and embellishment, every pore, every part of the body, every limb and joint, every utterance, every article of clothing and adornment of the company of enlightening beings, as well as the Buddha Vairochana, showing reflections of the oceans of their past efforts involved in transcendent morality, in transcendent tolerance, even showing amputation of limbs, so sort of a reference to Bodhidharma's student and the fierce devotion, you know, even with the amputation of limbs, I will go forward. I want to receive the teaching. So even showing amputation of limbs in the transcendent energy of all enlightening beings, surging boldly forward in seeking an attainment of the ocean of meditation of all Buddhas, in seeking of the ultimate truth to which the wheel of teaching of all Buddhas leads, in the manifestation of the embodiment of great determination, which relinquishes all there is, in the joy of the vision of all Buddhas, the path of all enlightening beings, and pleasing all beings, in the arrangement of purification of means of accomplishment of the ocean of vows of all enlightening beings, in the purification of the strength of the attainment of transcendent power of all enlightening beings, and showing images of the oceans of past effort involved in the sphere of knowledge of all enlightening beings, all these reflected images bursting into plain view by clouds of all kinds of miraculous displays throughout the cosmos. Oh yeah, I was going to keep reading to the end of the paragraph, so I just needed a pause. That was one sentence, by the way. That was the first sentence of the paragraph. The great enlightening being and company offered these to the Buddha, then went to the zenith, magically produced towers of various arrays of diamonds, as well as lion thrones of the universally good enlightening being inside emerald lotuses, and sat thereon, having covered their bodies with nets of fiery jewels and put on crowns of jewels with crests of trailing strings of diamonds vibrating with the names of the Buddhas of past, present, and future. Okay. That's just from the zenith. And, you know, there were similar ones coming from all the other directions. So then it goes on, and similar to in other sutras like the Vimalakirti Sutra, it says, the disciples didn't see any of this. And the reason they didn't see any of this is because they had no thought of great compassion and had accomplished what they did only for themselves. So it's like how to open to this is opening to, I am practicing not just by myself, not just for myself, but with all beings and for all beings. So when we touch that deep compassion, then a different reality can open to us. So, but lest we despair and think that we, like the disciples, are not seeing this, there's something that's said by an enlightening being named Supreme Moon of Vows Emanated Throughout the Cosmos. So that being says, as everywhere is made one hue by an emerald, vision of Buddha makes beings the hue of enlightenment. So this is, you know, you can imagine, like maybe a big emerald, really big. And then if a light shines through that, like if it were here and a light was shining through, and since it has, you know, it's a jewel, so it has many sides. So if we shone a light through that, like in this room, then suddenly everyone is emerald. I mean, has the hue of an emerald, because that's reflecting and shining out. So as that happens, vision of Buddha makes beings the hue of enlightenment. So like you can imagine, I mean, we're not separate from Buddha, but let's just imagine for a minute a Buddha, like that Buddha there. And that Buddha is looking at us. And through that gaze, then we become the hue of enlightenment. So in other words, we are enlightenment. It's, and you know, like if there's not this other being that's out there, you know, because also we are Buddha, everything is Buddha, everything is the body of the Buddha. So that's actually happening with many gazes, including an internal gaze. Also, the enlightening being named King of Fiery Energy of the Truth tells us, thinking of Buddha in every way with perfect concentration, even after untold billions of eons, Buddha would still be inconceivable. Those who are intent on this and whose minds delight therein will attain these realms, which are hard to see. So let me say that again. Thinking of Buddha in every way, with perfect concentration, even after untold billions of eons, Buddha would still be inconceivable. Those who are intent on this, so in other words, those who are intent on thinking of Buddha, even though it's inconceivable, still intent on thinking of Buddha, and also intent on developing concentration, and doing zazen. So if we're intent on thinking of Buddha, developing concentration, practicing zazen, and we invite our minds to delight in that activity, then we will attain these realms, which are hard to see. The enlightening being named Flames of Knowledge of Vows of the Illuminator tells us how to proceed then. What do we do? So he or she, don't know if it's a he or she, I should just say they, tells us how to proceed by saying this is what bodhisattvas do. So they're describing this being Flames of Knowledge of the Vows of the Illuminator is describing this is what bodhisattvas do. Bodhisattvas think about, this is what bodhisattvas do. So if we want to become a bodhisattva, if we want to attain these realms which are hard to see, then this is the practice we should do. Bodhisattvas think about the course of life, but do not take refuge in it. They take refuge in the Buddha's teaching, sporting in the realm of Buddha. Sporting, playing in the realm of Buddha. Whatever mundane fortune takes place in the world of sentient beings, they resolutely relinquish it all, for they are set on the attainment of Buddhahood. Vainly clinging, the world is always fettered. There, those of unobstructed action, are always set on the welfare of beings. So this world, vainly clinging, always fettered, it's there that we are. We are in this world of endurance. And yet, what we do is we are set on the welfare of beings. So that's what we are encouraged to do. Also, unequaled in their action, inconceivable to all beings, they consider the happiness of the world whereby suffering is repelled. They have purified knowledge of enlightenment and are sympathetic to all beings as lights of the world emancipating all beings. So sometimes when we hear this, because it's said in this language of all beings, you know, unequaled, I mean, it's very... what's the word for that in grammar? Where it's most, all, superlative, thank you. So it's saying this, and then we think, with our view of, you know, conventional reality, like it's not like that. I make mistakes. I'm imperfect. So that can come up. But I invite you to set that aside. It's like that's not what it's about. It's about the possibilities of being sympathetic to all beings, for example. Even though you might think, well, sometimes there's a being that I'm not sympathetic to because they annoy me. So, okay. But we can still have an aspiration of sympathetic to all beings. And that's a developing compassion. So the keys really are zazen, concentration, sitting zazen, sitting, walking, standing, lying down, zazen, and compassion, developing our compassion. So as I said, the whole book of the books included in the Flower Ornament Scripture is over 1,500 pages. The last book, this Entry into the Realm of Reality, book 39, is 383 pages long. So we won't cover it all, even in a week. The talks in the session will just be a sampling. And I would like to focus today, and I know we're going to go over today, just by the way, because we needed to do the setup. I'd like to focus on the abode of inspiration, which is the first of those 10 abodes. In case you were wondering what the 10 were, I'll tell you without going into too much detail. So the 10 abodes are initial determination or inspiration, which is the one we'll talk about, Two is preparing the ground or the cultivation of compassion. Three is practice to clarify knowledge and emptiness. Four is noble birth, that is rebirth that occurs from the enlightening teachings. Five is skill and means. Six is correct state of mind or having a wide view. Seven is non-regression. Eight is youthful nature. Nine is the prince of the teachings or development of discursive knowledge of science and technology. And 10 is coronation or anointment, or I would say blessing. So let's start with the abode of inspiration. I'd like to read, this is not quite as way out there, this is a little more descriptive. I'd like to read from the entry into the realm of reality when Sudhana starts looking for teachers. So he's sent on this journey by Manjushri, the Bodhisattva of wisdom. And the first teacher, you know, so it's kind of like a, what do you call it, like a treasure hunt. So Manjushri says, go and see Megashri. And then he talks to Megashri, and Megashri says, go and see the next one. And then and it's like that. And each teacher like leads him to the next teacher. So this is the first one. Then Sudhana, so he's just been told, okay, this is what you should do, go and meet this teacher. Then Sudhana, pleased, enraptured, transported with joy, delighted, happy, and cheerful, laid his head at the feet of Manjushri in respect, circled Manjushri hundreds of and thousands of times, and looked at him hundreds and thousands of times, with a mind full of love for the spiritual friend, unable to bear not seeing the spiritual friend, so he's going to have to leave Manjushri to go on this journey, with tears streaming down his face as he wept, he left Manjushri. And then Sudhana proceeded by stages to the country of Ramavaranta. Having reached Ramavaranta, reflecting on and tasting the mentally pleasing enjoyments based on higher action born of past roots of goodness, he went to Mount Sugriva, climbed the mountain, and looked in every direction for the monk Megashri. Finally, after 7 days, he saw the monk walking on the plateau of another peak. And then he goes up and pays his respect. And then when he asks, he says, I've determined to seek supreme enlightenment, but I do not know how an enlightening being should learn the conduct of enlightening beings or accomplish it or begin the practice or carry it out, fulfill it, purify it, comprehend it, realize it, follow it, keep it. I don't know how to do it. And Megashri doesn't answer him directly, so he kind of answers him by saying, here's what I have learned. And then in that saying, here's what I've realized, he's kind of telling him, this is what you should do. And I think it might be most helpful to, to look at the commentary on this by Li Tongzhuan, who was an 8th century Chinese Buddhist. And let's see if I can find that. Here it is. Because this also tells of, actually, is this part of the commentary? Might be the translator's introduction to the commentary. Yes, it is. Okay. So there's the book, there's a commentator, and the translator's introduction. So I'm going to read from that. This also kind of talks about some of the symbolism that's really helpful. So with Megashri, it says, first Sudhana climbed the mountain of marvelous peaks and saw the monk Megashri, which means glorious clouds, and realized the abode of inspiration. Clouds have four meanings. They are everywhere, representing concentration. They bear moisture, representing virtue. They shade and cover, representing compassion. They shower rain, representing knowledge. The significance of monkhood because it's the monk Megashri. The significance of monkhood is the cessation of opinionated argument. The word used means stopping contention. Well, that's a good one for developing compassion. Stopping contention. When one is without thoughts, still and quiet as a mountain, then formless, subtle principles become evident. So Sudana climbed the mountain to its furthest reach and looked all over. For Megashri, this symbolizes use of the power of calm observation to gain access to the abode of enlightenment. Sudana saw Megashri on a separate peak. This symbolizes going through expedient meditation methods to get into the original state where there is neither concentration nor distraction. Megashri was walking slowly. I don't remember it said that he was walking slowly in our description, but maybe it's in the characters that translated that said he was walking. It was maybe obvious that he was walking slowly. So the slow walking symbolized being undisturbed, and walking around represents not lingering in concentration trance. Megashri saw all living beings as the body of enlightenment. So this is what he tells Sudana, like, okay, this is what I see. All beings as the body of enlightenment, and the mundane world as like light, like a reflection, neither false nor real, inherently undefiled. He maintained the integrity of ordinary vision, so he saw living beings. He maintained the integrity of objective vision, so for him, all objects were insubstantial. So at the same time, he saw living beings and he saw that they were insubstantial. He maintained the integrity of the vision of knowledge so he could magically produce objects. He saw the body of Buddhas to be free of both being and non-being. Therefore, Megashri told Sudana that he always saw infinite Buddhas of the 10 directions and knew the teaching of universal vision through the light of knowledge attained by the recollection of the realm of Buddhas. Okay, so there's a lot there, but let me just say a couple things about that. So this seeing the infinite Buddhas in the 10 directions. So I've been, you know, with this scripture for a while, and I just invite myself to see like that. Even if I don't, like, I'm not so much a visual person. Like some people in meditation, they can close their eyes and then like see things, like a movie. I don't have, my mind isn't like that. So some people have that, I don't. But I still can. Buddha, one of the infinite Buddhas. And even though I don't see like a figure of the Buddha in the cup, I still have a sense of it. Like this is more than just a cup of water. It's more than just what conventional reality says. So that's one thing to see in that way, whether it's actually seeing with the eye sense or with a different kind of mental perception. And then the other thing it says here is the vision through the light of knowledge attained by recollection of the realm of Buddhas. So remembering, reading, or looking at a tapestry, remembering, recollecting the realm of Buddhas. So that's how Megashri sees living beings. That's what he's teaching Sudana. So there's another angle on this story, which is where my name comes from. So it's not, my name doesn't come directly from here. It comes from the commentary on case 23 of the Blue Cliff Record, which references this story of Megashri and Sudana. So the case 23 is called Pao Fu's Summit of the Mystic Peak. And I'll just read the section of the commentary on that koan that references this story. In the teachings, it says that the mendicant Megashri always stayed on the lone summit of the Peak of Wonder. He never came down from the mountain. Sudana went to call on him and search for 7 days without encountering him. But then one day they met on a separate peak. When he had seen him, Megashri explained for Sudana that the three worlds are a moment of thought, and the wisdom and illumination of all the Buddhas, the gate of the Dharma that appears everywhere. Given that Megashri never came down from the mountain, why then did they meet on a separate peak? If you say that Megashri must have come down from the mountain, so by the way, in mountains it's like this, there's, so he's saying he never came down from his peak, and Sudana's in the mountains, but it's on another peak. If you say that Megashri must have come down for them to meet, yet in the teachings it says he never did come down from the mountain, that he was always on the solitary summit of the peak of wonder. At this point, where are Megashri and Sudana really? So my ordination teacher, who gave me the name Sosan, which means twin mountain, that's where it comes from, the Megashri and Sudana on the mountain. My ordination teacher said, not only did Megashri not come down from his mountain peak, but Sudana, the student, also did not come down. And that is why it is said the two met on a separate peak. So my understanding of this is that the teacher is sovereign and holds their own, but the student is also sovereign and holds their own truth. So each, the student and teacher, are both sovereign. Each person stands on the solitary summit of the mystic peak, whether they know it or not. And if they know it, they'll be grounded in their own truth and be able to meet others. If they don't know, they will wander in confusion. Also, if the student tries to climb up on the teacher's peak, that's not so good. That's not to say teachers are not helpful. Of course they are. I'm only here through the beneficence of my teachers. But even still, the student needs to find their own way, climb their own mountain. So I have this name, Twin Mountain, but I say, well, really, there's only one mountain. Or not even a mountain, only oneness. So that's the truth that is going beyond all of our stories. And yet, of course, we also be careful not to be lost in oneness, because there is only oneness, and there is also two-ness. There is Megashri on his mountain and Sudana on his mountain. You are Sudana, and Megashri is the guide you are seeking, whether that is an actual person you're connecting with or an internal guide. So you can place yourself in the story. Sudana, the seeker, and I hope that's what we'll do as we go forward tomorrow and also the rest of the week. You are Sudana, the seeker. And then you're seeking these guides, in this case, Megashri. So how do you meet this guide on a separate peak? Well, you do it by letting go of fixed notions of self, and also by appreciating the diversity and individuality of many beings. So that's why, like even in this way out story, it's not just saying there's 5,000 beings. It then goes on to name 100 of them. Specifically, what are they named? So we can ask ourselves, where are you really? So that's the last, kind of the last line of the comment, part of the commentary I read. At this point, where are Megashri and Sudana really? Where are you really? That's a way of inviting ourselves to let go of our fixed ideas about who we are and where we are, and to really be ourselves, shining and free. So as I said, the reason that I want to study the flower ornament scripture, and I have this idea that I'm going to read the whole thing, not to you, to myself. I figured if I read 4 to 5 pages a day, with some exceptions for like vacation and if I'm in session and not reading, if I read 4 to 5 pages a day, I could finish in a year. So, and it takes about maybe like, I timed it like 15 minutes, I think, to read 4 to 5 pages if I read it out loud, which I would kind of need to, because otherwise, if I didn't read it out loud, I would probably tend to skim over. Oh, yeah, okay, yada, yada, yada. So I started doing that. Well, actually, I started doing it in July when I did a 10-day solo retreat. I didn't know that I was going to be doing it for a year, but I started reading the book of the Entry into the Realm of Reality, and I just read some every day. And it was quite wonderful, and so now I started at the very beginning of the whole thing. So why am I doing this, and why are we studying this? Again, it's to help us let go of our fixed ideas and really open us to a world that we don't, a view of reality that we don't often, especially in our more heavily scientific sensibility, which I'm not doing away with. In fact, one of the abodes, didn't I say, was the development of science and technology. So it's not throwing it away, but it's just, let's not only be fixed on that, let's open to some other things. So how you can do that, be present to each moment, each person, each object, and enter fully. And with this idea, you know, holding this idea in mind temporarily to just say, there's more to this than what I am perceiving right now. So that's a way to, so you're still grounded in what's happening, we're still paying attention, we're still following the forms, and we're just inviting ourselves to open to, there's more than what I see. And to be inspired by that, that's the, if that inspires you. If that doesn't inspire you, you can find a different way, it's okay. I don't mind, but that's my suggestion. So I didn't go too long over. So thank you very much.